Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Wednesday to all of you. Nice to be with you. Appreciate you getting up with us in the morning. We're with you till 10 a.m. We promise every day, every weekday, we're not on vacation. And we don't take breaks during football season, baby. It's head coach searching season right now here in the city of Houston. I'm Sean Pendergast. He is Seth Payne. Good morning, my friend. How are you?
Good morning. That reminds me, as much as we got to jump right into all the stuff that's going on right now, I'm going to have my hernia surgery in a couple weeks, November 9th, I believe.
Godspeed.
And as you said, we're going to be here every day. Yeah. That morning, I don't think I'll be on air, depending on when my surgery is. If the surgery, we only have a two-hour show that day, so if the surgery is at like 9 a.m., I might just go ahead and bring a Comrex unit into the hospital with me, and I can broadcast during pre-op.
Okay.
The Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday is when I'm curious, because some people have told me that hernia surgery is no big deal. Other people have told me that those first few days afterwards, there will be no laughing, there will be no mirth, there will be no, not even because of the pain, but that you can't breathe hard or, you know, talk loud or anything. That's kind of a part of my game, both laughing and talking loud. So I plan on doing the show from my bedroom, but I don't know. I don't want to hurt my performance by just being unable to laugh or yell.
Yeah, you not being able to yell, laugh, or breathe hard is like Deshaun Watson having his right arm ripped off. You know what I mean? Like, that's a big part of your game. What has generally been your recovery time frame for previous surgeries? I don't know if you've had a hernia surgery before, but I know you've undergone many a procedure. Are you generally a pretty good healer?
Yeah, oh yeah. I mean, I don't usually need the painkillers all that much. I partake of them because why not?
Yeah.
But So I don't think that's going to be an issue. It's just I've never had an internal organ surgery before. I've never had my intestines pushed back in through a hole in my. My testicle canal, apparently.
It's got graphic for 6:02 in the morning.
Yeah, I apologize for everybody. This is why I passed out when the doctor was explaining it to me.
That's not an exaggeration. Seth passed out.
I passed out three times, and they took me to the emergency room because the hernia doctor was kind of freaked out because this big dude fell on the floor in his office. And I was texting my wife, and I felt kind of foolish because they wanted to check out my heart and everything. And Brandy asked, like, what was it? Why, do they know why you passed out? And I said, I think it's a combination of being dehydrated and me just being a general wimp about it. I thought this stuff only happened in the movies, but it happens in real life. I got so overcome by like being freaked out about them talking about my intestines and my I forget what it's called, my inguinal canal.
Yeah.
That I just passed out. Seth, like one of those fainting goats on YouTube.
You and I have been friends for a long time. We've been co-hosts for coming up on a year and a half pretty soon here by the holiday season, but you really haven't connected with a friend or a co-host until you've gotten that first person point of view picture with your feet pointed in the air, sitting in the back of an ambulance, taking a picture of the emergency workers who are loading you into the ambulance. So you've gotten that picture from your co-host, like, hey, look at these guys who are helping me out here after I passed out in a doctor's office. I'm like, what? I'm glad you got a good sense of humor about it, my friend.
I think it was the passing out three times that freaked them out. That I kept. They had to like bring me back to consciousness three total times. I think if it was just once, they would have thought no big deal.
Did you see anything when you passed out? Like, did you see a light or anything like that? Were you drawn towards a light? Do we know how close you got to the pearly gates or anything?
You know what's happened? I don't know if you've ever passed out before. Like, the only other time I've ever passed out with where I was completely sober was when you do that thing when you're a kid and you do like 10 squats with your holding your breath and
you press your chest or whatever.
And you know how when you wake up, it feels like you've been out for like 2 hours?
Right.
That's what it felt like. The first time I woke up, I was just happy that I wasn't having a heart attack. Like, as I felt myself losing consciousness the first time, I was going through the checklist. Because remember our listener that was a paramedic had told us the difference between a stroke and a heart attack?
Right.
So, like, the first time I was going out, I was going through the checklist for heart attack. And I was like, okay, I'm pretty sure I'm not having a heart attack. But wait a second, what's the stroke? So then I came to and immediately I thought, try to say something and see if you can speak clearly. And I could.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, I don't think I'm having a stroke. And then I passed out again.
What you call passing out, I feel like, is like you saying, good, I can go back to sleep. You know,
like, it's like, this is nice. You know what? The nurse was there and she was like rubbing my chest because apparently that's something you do to somebody to wait. I don't know.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah, and just like it felt very matronly. Like it felt like very motherly. Like I felt like a child again. I was like, oh, mom's taking care of me when I'm sick. I'll be okay.
Well, people are sending prayers up on the text page to you. It's November 9th, people. Seth is going to get his hernia procedure. He'll be fine. Seth will be good.
Oh, yeah. I'm not stressed about it at all, other than that I'm generally grossed out about anything involving my guts.
Yeah.
So like, immediately when he started showing me the charts, it's nothing but guts, man. It's nothing but guts and innards, and freak me out. You can watch the whole story on my Instagram.
Seth does have a story up on his Instagram about it. You can go find that.
I had it professionally edited by some young gentleman
in
Indonesia.
It's really good. I feel like it's an Emmy Award winner coming up here for you. All right, so Seth, we're off and running here. Wow, that's pretty good. That's a good deal. We're off and running here on a Wednesday. We're going to get into quite a bit of football today, coaching search stuff, getting ready. Packers coming into town on Sunday. There's audio out there of Albert Breer talking about Jack Easterby we're going to get to. But right here, just off the top, I just want to put kind of a quick ad or maybe a bow on the Luno talk from yesterday. We did a lot on Jeff Luno's conversation with Vanessa Richardson, including we had Vanessa on yesterday at 8 o'clock to talk about how that all came together. And there was a lot of good stuff in that interview. Here's what I want to run by you. And it's the national perspective on this thing. The national perspective still on the Astros and the sign stealing. I always think it's interesting to hear perspectives from national hosts. And the one that I get to hear more than any other is Damon Amanda Lara, because the first hour of his show runs on this station before our show. So when I'm in studio getting ready here, I've got it on in the background and I'm listening to it. I think DA does a really good job. He's a really, really good national host. But he teased something today into his second segment where he plays a lot of audio in the second segment. And the tease was the Astros still don't get it. And I said, okay, I think I know what this is about, but let's let it play out here. And he said the tease was the Astros still don't get it. And then when they came back from break, he proceeded to play this bit of audio.
I didn't know we were cheating. I had no idea. I wasn't involved. Major League Baseball's report stated that I didn't know anything about the trash can banging scheme. They stated I might have known something about the video decoding scheme and not paid it much attention, but there was really no credible evidence of that claim. I didn't know. I didn't know about either of them. And it felt like on that day that I was getting punished for something that I didn't do, and it didn't feel right.
At this point, Seth, do we need to remind Damon Amanda Lara and other national hosts that Jeff Luno not employed by the Astros anymore? Like,
apparently, this is what's been frustrating about this, and this is what makes me feel a certain amount of empathy for New England Patriots fans, which, by the way, has been going on for 18 years now. That the Patriots fans, you think you're sick of trash can jokes?
Yeah.
Get ready for the next 20 years,
right?
Because as long as the Astros remain relevant, you're going to hear jokes about trash cans. The Patriots still hear jokes about Spygate. It's the reason I have empathy is that people in New England know the details, the ins and outs of Spygate so well because they lived through it and talked about it for a year, just like we know the details and intricacies of the cheating scandal,
right?
The sign stealing scandal. And it gets really frustrating when people outside the city are so woefully misinformed. I mean, when Stan Van Gundy, honestly, I like Jeff Van Gundy a lot. Maybe he ends up being the next coach of the Rockets. Who knows? His brother's acting like a clown about this. His brother, Stan Van Gundy, is on Twitter acting like the cheating continued right up through 2019, and that all of a sudden in the playoffs, you know, when at the end of the regular season, Stan Van Gundy started going off about the Astros. You know, he can go screw himself. And honestly, I encourage people to lustily boo Stan Van Gundy whenever he shows up at one of his brother's game. He's acting like a complete and total fool and clown about this. Frankly, I almost don't want Jeff Van Gundy to be the coach of the Rockets just because you can't rein in his stupid-ass brother.
Control your brother.
The lesser brother, the less entertaining, the less interesting brother is the one taking shots at the Astros. Well, the greater brother is trying to get a job with the Houston Rockets.
Yeah, it's frustrating. Like when I heard that tease, I'm going, I know what's coming here, and this is where I feel like, do I need to reach out and remind? I mean, I know Damon Amendola knows Luno's not with the Astros anymore, but it feels like gratuitous piling on. But I guess that might be part of the punishment in this whole thing, I suppose.
I was looking at one of the Astros fans, Keuchel's beard, I think. And he was kind of going through. And I think, honestly, he was sticking up for Luno a little more than he should have. But he was making the point that so much of this, when the Red Sox scandal came out about the Apple Watches, much of the talk was, wow, if this happened in football, it'd be a really big deal. You know? Like, wow, this is weird. Nobody's even making a big deal out of this. When the St. Louis Cardinals actually committed a federal crime
they went
and
to jail.
Broke into the Astros database, whatever.
Right.
You know, but for whatever reason, it's because of the historical dominance of that offense for three straight years.
Yep.
It was the fact that the Astros were just so good. Just like with the Patriots, people don't really want to accept that it was possible without cheating. So any impropriety at all becomes the sole explanation for their greatness.
All right, we're off and running on a Wednesday. Texans have looked better offensively the last couple games. Imagine if they stopped doing this. We will tell you what it is next. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Wednesday. We've got our new matchup for the Texans head coach listener bracket. We continue to roll through the first round. We are into the Rick Smith regional. We have four regionals, each named after a former Texans GM. And yesterday, Dabo Swinney, to nobody's shock, smoked Jay Gruden in a 1-8 matchup. We've got a 4-5 today. The winner of this matchup will face Dabo Swinney in the Sweet 16. It's Kevin O'Connell, who, if you don't know who he is the offensive coordinator for the LA Rams. So he is he is this year's candidate. He is this year's token. Sean McVay may have coughed on him, candidate. So go ahead and hire him as your next head coach. He's a 4 seed versus Brian Schottenheimer, son of Marty, OC in Seattle. Seattle's been great offensively this year. He's a 5 seed.
I like it. Yeah, let's talk about him like it's in medieval times or
yes.
something. Brian, son of Marty.
Son of Marty. First
Brian,
of it, second
of
his
Marty.
Name. Yeah.
Thrower of screens.
Yes.
Because that's what he is known as forever. Is like he hung his hat on, hey, 10 shots to Tavon Austin in the flats per game is going to be the path to glory for Brian Schottenheimer. I can't believe that we're talking about Brian Schottenheimer as a head coaching candidate, yet here we are, and I have to give him his credit. He's done a good job with Russell Wilson. Whole let Russell cook thing is happening with Brian Schottenheimer. I actually double-checked this with Gallant, because, you know, Gallant's the morning host up there in Seattle.
Yeah.
And and he said, he's as surprised as anybody about the job that Brian Schottenheimer has done. I still hesitate, though, because it's a long track record of people thinking that Brian Schottenheimer underperformed with this talent that he had.
Yeah, that would be an underwhelming hire. You know, there's certain hires, Seth, that if they make for this head coaching gig, that there's a set of names where I don't even need to see any more of the information. I would be like, yes, I get it. That's a good hire. I've seen enough of this guy in press conferences and play calling and everything else to feel confident that this guy is the right hire. And then, to me, Schottenheimer is on that list where I go, okay, I need to see videos of the interviews. I need to see how this guy came across in the interviews, because the body of work as a coordinator or a coach is not necessarily there. So he obviously made a great impression to the committee making this decision. I need to see the videos of that interview, and Schottenheimer is on that list for me.
The Kevin O'Connell one is interesting, because for one, I first, doesn't Jerry O'Connell have like 7 brothers that are all actors? That's my first thought was like, wait a second, is this another prolific O'Connell brother?
He follows me on Twitter, by the way, Jerry O'Connell.
Jerry O'Connell?
Yeah. Should we try to get him on the show? Should I DM him?
Yeah, how many people does he follow?
I don't know. I'll go check. But you continue to do that thing where you
good
talk.
Good for you.
Yeah,
Jerry O'Connell, not Jerry O'Connell, but Kevin O'Connell. Now, this would be an interesting one because, you know, when the whole flurry of Sean McVay coaching tree hires happened, people were appropriately skeptical of it. So far, I'd say this last week notwithstanding, Matt LaFleur has done a pretty damn good job with Aaron Rodgers. And it's been like a slow progression. Last year it wasn't all that great. Now all of a sudden Aaron Rodgers looks like one of the best quarterbacks ever again. Kevin O'Connell took a team that last year really disappointed offensively with the Rams. All of a sudden this year, they really look like they're humming. Like they're it's not just that they're more productive. They look like a more finely tuned machine than they were last year. That's what's, you know, and Sean McVay was there last year and Kevin O'Connell wasn't the offensive coordinator. It feels like, man, maybe O'Connell really understands what's going on there and he might be able to replicate that elsewhere.
Yeah, Goff looks good again and they're getting it done with, this Henderson kid they drafted out of Memphis last year is doing some nice things. So, yeah, that Rams.
Did you know they lost Brandon Cooks?
Yeah, no, I had heard something about that. Where did he end up?
Hey, last couple of weeks, no complaints.
He's been fine. He had 9 catches in the second half on Sunday. He was good. he was a big reason they were in that game at the end. Now, Brandon Cooks was big for the Texans on second and third down in that game and sometimes on first down. The thing that I was teasing into this segment, and I'll credit Aaron Reese's article about Deshaun Watson. We touched on this yesterday a little bit, that Deshaun statistically has been amazing for the last month, and particularly the last 2 games since Bill O'Brien has left the building. The one thing that Tim Kelly keeps doing, and at some point he's got to stop doing this because it's just you're banging your head against the wall, and I'm sure he's going to do this again on Sunday to see if they can establish something. But here are the numbers from Week 6 against the Titans on first down. With Deshaun throwing on first down, Seth, 13 of 16, 187 yards. That's 11.7 yards per attempt. That's astronomical. A 76.5% success rate. With David Johnson running the ball on first down, 9 carries, 35 yards, which actually feels that like more than what it felt like on Sunday. It felt like anytime they handed the ball to him on first down, you were at best in 2nd and 9. Running David Johnson on first down is empty football right now. You are forfeiting plays to the other team, and this team can't afford to forfeit plays right now.
I hesitate to listen. This is the problem with saying that you can never run on first down, is then that's dumb. Then you become having the opposite effect, which is, okay, you can become very predictable that you're going to run on or pass on first down all the time. I think that just being better at running the ball on 1st and 10 so that when you do run the ball, you've got a reasonable chance of succeeding makes a lot more sense. And I think part of the problem with the Texans right now, it's not David Johnson specifically. It's that the offensive line is not blocking the run blocks well. When they do block well, David Johnson isn't hitting the hole all that hard. So sometimes he's getting hit in the backfield, but it's still David Johnson's fault. Like, he should already be at the line of scrimmage when some guy in the backside is hitting him. And the third is that running out of the shotgun, frankly, you've got to A, set it up with a pass first, and B, you've got to be really good at that because it's a lot easier to defend the run out of shotgun. It's harder for the running back to hit the line of scrimmage at full speed. It allows the linebackers to get an easier read on play action. There's just a whole lot about it running out of shotgun is bad. So I'll blame some of that on Deshaun. I think Deshaun's got to get better at playing under center. Yes, it's great that you spread it out. Yes, it's great that you're good out of the gun. In the National Football League, generally still to this day, even as people run more out of spread, the way you really impose your will on a team is to be able to do things from under center, at least part of the time. And right now, the Texans aren't really good at that.
Yeah, that's something the next head coach or next play caller, offensive coordinator, has got to clean up with Deshaun, get him more comfortable doing that for sure. Sage advice for the Texans in hiring their next head coach. We've got that for you next. So the Texans are in the middle of a head coaching search. We know that. This was an interesting tweet yesterday, Seth, from our friend Kevin Cooper, who used to be in charge of media relations for the Texans back in the latter portion of the Gary Kubiak era and the beginning portion of the Bill O'Brien era. I think the first couple of years of Bill.
Well, and he was with the team from 2002, so he was there during Dom Capers also.
Yeah, he was with the Texans for a long time. So he was there through a couple of coaching changes, too.
He was the first, I believe he was the first guy that ever picked me up from the airport.
How did he do?
In Houston. He did a great job.
Did
I was like, well, this is a pleasant young man.
Okay.
And then he turned into a, now he's, now he, Now he owns some company that does something tech that I don't understand.
Right.
So I always assume, if you tell me that you're doing something with tech and I don't understand it, I assume you're fabulously successful.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He's one of those people that intimidates me with his assumed success. You know, but so not intentionally. He doesn't walk up to me and say, "Hey, Sean, listen, I'm real successful." He's just a really smart dude and a good guy, and he's a loyal listener to this show. But I want to read the tweet to people, because this is a guy who'd been in the building for a couple of coaching changes, and I think there's a lot of validity to this. He says a lot of things in here that to me kind of line up with my philosophies just on hiring in general. Forget about just a head coach, anybody in a position of leadership. And he says, "I've enjoyed listening to the Texans coaching search talk, but I had a small bit to add. Teams don't hire a head coach for what he can do on third down. They hire to create a sustainable culture internally. Does he listen to ideas, hire a competent staff, look to innovate? Is he organized and approachable? How's he with business ops, the PR staff? Who are his media allies? Does he understand medical or needs of the equipment staff? How are his communications with ownership? Is there order internally?" And all of this happens before day one of practice. Basically the opposite of everything going on in Dallas right now. We'll get to that in just a little bit. But Seth, you're someone who was in an NFL building for 10 years, played for a handful of coaches. This feels pretty spot on for what you'd look for from anybody in a position of leadership.
Yeah, I think, and Dom Capers and Gary Kubiak are the two guys that I had actual conversations about this specifically with before, and both of those guys were great coordinators, right? And both of those guys were prepared when they became head coaches in terms of having a plan and whatnot and understanding the challenges. But I think both of those guys, the first time they were head coaches, it's still a slap in the face as to, oh, wow, everything is really my responsibility. All the calls that happen at 2 a.m. that you never knew about are your calls. When somebody, when various people just decide that they want to, that they got to get their 2 cents in and they happen to be powerful people, then you got to try to figure out how to accommodate all that. Like all these little things you would never think of and you never talk about, it's all there. So you have to be a lot more dynamic of a personality and a lot more skilled overall than a lot of coordinators or defensive or offensive coordinators. So that's a challenge. So I would disagree with Kevin a little bit, where he says that you're not hiring them based on what they can do on third down. The dream candidate is the guy that's going to help you out on third down, but also be really good at hiring another offensive coordinator who ideally is as smart or smarter than you. And I think that was one of Bill O'Brien's weaknesses. I don't think he liked having people on offense that were smarter than him or more experienced than him. Maybe Carl Banks. He brought in Carl Banks, and maybe that's one that
Carl
broke
Smith.
The mold. Excuse me, Carl. Yeah, yeah. Carl Banks. Carl Smith a little bit. But yeah, it's how are you going to manage that offensive coordinator, even if you're still the offensive coordinator? Is there somebody underneath you that's a bright up-and-coming guy?
I think a willingness to listen to dissenting opinions, too, of people that you hire, right? I mean, I think that's the feeling. None of us are in the room when Bill O'Brien and Tim Kelly are in there with the quarterbacks or were in there with the quarterbacks and going through the game plan and things like that. But I feel like there's been this feeling, and I think it's only been increased over the last couple of weeks as Tim Kelly starts to gradually spread his wings and do things a little differently than Bill O'Brien. I think there was a feeling that a lot of O'Brien's coaches, at least on the offensive side of the ball, which is where O'Brien had his paws on that, is that it was all O'Brien. Like that there was not a latitude for dissenting opinion in the rumors of things like Kelly or the offensive staff working with Deshaun to put a game plan together, and then O'Brien coming in and smashing it against the wall on a Friday and putting in his own stuff in there.
Yeah.
I think you have to be amenable to constructive conflict,
Well, you have to give guys real authority. I think that's the hardest thing. And it's interesting, people talk about leadership all the time. There's a lot more talk about leadership than there actually is trying to understand leadership. On a football team, coaches love to talk about giving players leadership, and then yet they don't ask the players to actually lead anything. Are your players conducting any of the meetings? Are your players, doing film sessions? Are your players, like, do they have actual leadership opportunities? Some guys work at that, some coaches do, and some just like to talk about leadership. And I think likewise, I think some coaches talk about delegating and they don't really understand delegating.
Yeah.
I'll take Parcells as an example. As somebody who broke everything you were talking about just there in some respects, like as far as how you treat people. Parcells treated people like dirt. I mean, he treated Belichick like he was his, you know, like his least favorite child. Mm-hmm. And he was an abusive father. He was really just like dress him down in front of people, humiliate him, do all those things. And yet, at the core of it all, I think he really respected Bill Belichick's defensive mind, and he let Bill Belichick do what he wanted to do on defense. I just never got the sense that, sometimes I hate saying this because it's a little bit of a stretch or a reach or speculative. I don't know if it didn't feel like Bill O'Brien respected people in general all that much. I don't know. Maybe that's unfair.
Yeah. I think there's a feeling maybe not respecting the intelligence of people, sort of people, whether.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's, just on that Hard Knocks, I know it's one little clip, but him acting like he was the guy that understood that Ryan Mallett and that Brian Hoyer were actually good NFL quarterbacks and everybody else was dumb and stupid.
Right.
Yeah, early on especially, we just got that feel from him. But like O'Brien, if anybody ever wondered why people didn't like Bill O'Brien, it was because it just oozed out of him the sense of superiority with nothing to back it up. You know, if Bill Belichick oozes superiority, then all right, so be it. He's damn superior. Just don't ooze superiority without the actual evidence to back it up. Tell me that Ryan Mallett can play in the NFL angrily.
Yeah, that was wrong. The article in The Athletic, you and I went through this back at the beginning of the year, Seth, and I think, you know, off air we talked about repurposing this. I think this is a good time to do it. And I'm just curious if we can rehash sort of your thoughts now, especially in light of the Texans having an actual head coaching search. And what I'm talking about here, it's an article from The Athletic by Sheil Kapadia. 7 guidelines to follow when searching for a new head coach. I think it's even more compelling to go through this now because the team that you and I cover and follow and root for is actually conducting a head coaching search. Ben, give us a little of the mood music underneath this so we can rapid fire these. Then we're going to get to the dumpster fire that is the Dallas Cowboys. But as the Texans go through their head coaching search here, and we would point you again to sportsradio610.com if you want to see a bracket with all the, what we feel are 32 candidates for the jobs, and you can go vote on that. Let's just rapid fire these here. And you tell me, Seth, if you were making this hire, how much would you adhere to each of these tenets of hiring that the Kapadia puts out there? The first one mentions leadership, like you just talked about. Prioritize leadership skills above all else.
I would say yes, and I agree with this, and I see this all over the place, but just like what I said about leadership skills a few minutes ago, I don't think a lot of people actually understand how to evaluate leadership skills. So what I would ask Cal McNair to do is don't just take somebody's ability to give a good pep talk or tell you about how how they're great leaders. You need specific evidence of their leadership skills and, you know, situations they've been in that required actual good leadership versus, you know, like, oh, I happen to have Johnny Manziel as my quarterback.
I think it's almost more important to talk to the people who are allegedly being led in those situations. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like doing, you know, like it's quasi reference checking, but once they tell you those stories, find a way to do that 360-degree evaluation and actually talk to the people who were being led in that situation and see if, indeed, they felt the same way about that. The next one, lean toward an offensive coach.
I would say, okay, if you're saying lean towards that, I'm still not convinced that that there's a whole lot of evidence that offensive coaches that are hired tend to succeed because of their offense and their offense alone, when special teams and defense matters a whole lot too. And I think some of the greatest success stories have been guys who have ended up, you know, Brian Billick, I think, with the Ravens. That ended up, he was an offensive genius, supposedly, but it ended up being the defense that they hung their hat on.
My fear with doing this, and I've always been somebody who says, yeah, lean towards an offensive coach, but I've kind of pulled my foot off the gas pedal after watching O'Brien the last couple of years, you know, his inability to kind of peel away from just the offense and be more of that CEO. I would say more lean towards a guy who has a good eye for offensive coaching talent, you know, somebody who could hire well offensively.
Plus, I think if you want to break the mold, too, and actually be successful hiring a head coach, with the vast majority of teams are not, I think part of that is that I believe more offensive coaches are simply hired. So, yes, there's a chance statistically that more of your successful coaches will be offensive-minded coaches. But sometimes that's just a self-fulfilling prophecy.
All right, the third one here, tenets, guidelines to use when you're searching for a new head coach from Shiel Kapadia of The Athletic. Move on from coaches who harp on, quote, flipping the field and, quote, manageable third downs in their interviews. I think basically saying, Seth, beware of the cliches. Beware of the coach firing and spewing the old school cliches.
Right, and I guess, but also, if it kind of hints that they've got an old school mentality about game strategy and game theory.
Right.
Where a lot of the more analytically minded, there are a lot of old beliefs about how to execute a game plan or how to construct a game plan that have been pretty much proven wrong. So, okay, be sure that this guy's forward-leaning. Like John Harbaugh now and how he feels about analytics compared to what maybe John Harbaugh felt about calling a game 10 years ago. He's changed a lot.
In some ways, Romeo Crennel, I think, is doing a big favor to maybe some of the candidates looking at this job who are a little older. And, yeah. I'm not assuming here that there's going to be ageism going on with this hire. But I think, you know, generally speaking, people view younger coaches as guys who think more progressively. I'm with you. I think they need someone who does what Romeo did on that two-point conversion attempt on Sunday, that goes forward on fourth down quite a bit. Romeo Crennel has been pleasantly advanced and aggressive in his way of thinking, and he's the oldest coach in the history of the league.
Well, you know what it's doing, too, is because the mainstream media is now into the analytics, what it's done is, I think there were times in the past where a lot of coaches would lean towards being aggressive, but there's always that fear of the repercussions that even in the back of their mind, they know that, look, I know the right call is to go for it most of the time, but I don't want to deal with everybody second guessing this. Go screw yourselves. Yeah. Like, I feel like it's almost as much as coaches, they'll tell you that doesn't affect them. Somewhere in their psyche, it does.
Maybe.
Same way the home crowd advantage helps basketball teams with the referees.
Yep.
Like, there's something that where they just can't control.
There is a psychological effect, no doubt.
So now the repercussions are less. The second guessing is less.
I feel like this fourth one, Seth, of the guidelines here is really almost, it's like 3A as opposed to 4. Find someone who is open-minded. I feel almost like that's a corollary to finding somebody that doesn't necessarily cling to the old-school tenets of old-school football, that kind of thing.
Right, and you know what I would go to is like Rich Gannon when he was flipping out about Romeo going for the two-point conversion.
Yes.
There's enough to know now. Like, you can read articles in the offseason and whatnot. Do you realize there are valid reasons? Like, whether you agree with it or disagree with it, and I would say this to the analytics people too. Like, Romeo going for it for the 2-point conversion there, there's really, it's not like either decision, yes or no, was the slam dunk, like, oh, this is what you have to do in that moment. Right. You know, the advanced stat models give it like a 1% for or 1% against, like the different model. It's just, it was really a coin flip decision. Just being open enough to know that, all right, in these situations, it's more ambiguous than I used to think it was. And, like, let me think through that. Let me examine my blind spots.
Yep. Number five here on the guidelines for hiring a new head coach from The Athletic. Cast a wide net and interview a lot of people. I think that's part of firing O'Brien after week four, Seth. It gives them a huge, huge runway to really dip their toe in the water with a lot of different candidates here.
Well, and that's where it's really nice, too. I mean, in any coaching search, and John McClain has talked about this with us a couple times, but and I've got coaching friends who have been screwed over by this, but I say screwed over. When you interview a coach, the guy really wants the job. So if you want to talk to him for 8 hours and basically have him give you everything he knows about the game of football, he's going to do it. So you do it over and over again with all these position coaches. I had one friend who was interviewed by Tom Coughlin, and he spent like 7 hours in talking football with Tom Coughlin. And this is just to be an assistant position coach.
Wow.
And he didn't get the job, but lo and behold, my friend is now a very, very good assistant coach in the NFL. He was not hired at that one, but lo and behold, that year, that position coach all of a sudden incorporated a lot of stuff that that my friend had recommended.
Intel. Yeah. Intel.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good
It was
stuff.
Actually... It was, well, I'll say who it was. It was Brant Boyer, who's the special teams coordinator for the Jets. He's like the one good assistant coach. He's been hired, like he was kept on by Gase.
Right.
Yeah, he's actually a very good special teams coordinator. I would imagine he's not hinted at all that he's miserable there, but I got to assume he's miserable.
Two more. How could you not be? Two more guidelines to hire a coach. We'll rapid fire these. Get a clear picture of how they are going to fill out their staff. Amen. Yeah, hiring's everything.
This is where I think Chip Kelly had one advantage going for him when he came into the league. It's like there was no nepotism because he didn't have a bunch of NFL buddies that he'd come up with over the last two decades. So he hired a bunch of guys that he flat out didn't know. One of the best things he did was he hired Jeff Stoutland, the offensive line coach, who remains in Philadelphia to this day. And until Chip started trying to do too much with the personnel, that was one of the strengths of their team. Their defensive line, their offensive line was just awesome. And it was because Chip Kelly had an open mind about who to hire.
Last one. Don't hire a head coach just because he once drove Belichick to the airport or brunched with Sean McVay.
Yeah. And especially I become more and more convinced every year when I see more and more of this. The Patriots way destroys people for working elsewhere.
Yeah.
On the coaching side of things, on the personnel side of things, I think it's all right. But I think that too many coaches come out of New England with that arrogance that we talked about, that kind of football arrogance that Bill Belichick had. You know, Ted used to tell me about this. There's like a feeling that permeates that building where you're just like, yeah, all these other places don't know how to do it. We know how to do it. We get it right. And all those assistant coaches really don't understand how much of it just came down to Belichick and
Brady
being as good as they were. And like, and I've told you before, a lot of them don't really understand just how incredible Brady is as a wide receivers coach.
Yep.
So it stains people. It soils them. It's not their fault. But spending all that time in New England ruins them for everywhere else.
Payne and Pendergast with you on a Wednesday. Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne. Here's Jane Slater from the NFL Network. Talking about, wow, what a dumpster fire it is in Dallas right now. Players talking openly now, at least openly to Jane Slater, about the mess that is the Dallas Cowboys coaching staff.
I'm told this coaching staff is totally unprepared. They don't teach. They don't have any sense of adjusting on the fly. Another saying, they just aren't good at their jobs.
Okay. I would say that flies in the face of every guideline Seth and I just spent the last 10 minutes on. They're just not good at their jobs. They just don't teach. Seth, that was a pretty powerful 11 seconds of audio right there for the Cowboys.
Yeah.
Is Mike McCarthy one and done in Dallas? Do you think Dallas could be one of the open jobs that the Texans are competing with next year?
This is the funniest thing about them hiring Mike McCarthy was – you remember that big expose that came out in Bleacher Report about the bad relationship that Aaron Rodgers and Mike McCarthy had? And one of the stories was that Mike McCarthy was missing team meetings so he could finish his massage.
Yes.
For legitimate reasons. He had some kind of neck or back issue. All these things. Like, it painted a really dicey picture of the team culture up there in Green Bay. And recent events in Green Bay would suggest that maybe there was some truth to that. Aaron Rodgers is a much better quarterback now with Matt LaFleur. Okay. So you have that, and maybe some of that's accurate, maybe some of it's not. He comes to Dallas, lies to Jerry Jones about having watched every snap of the Cowboys season the previous year and being much better prepared than he was, admits to lying in the press conference, but somehow Jerry, I guess, took his word about what happened up in Green Bay. I don't for the life of me understand how Mike McCarthy got a job so fast when it was such a train wreck up there in Green Bay.
It's incredible. It really is incredible. It's one of the reasons why I don't think Bill O'Brien's going to get a job immediately. I know John McClain, we'll have John on in about an hour. John thinks that there's a good chance O'Brien has a job next year. I just think Bill O'Brien, maybe like McCarthy, he needs a year or two of cleansing before I would hire him to run my football team. All right, we head into the 7 o'clock hour. Could Jack Easterby's presence lead to hiring a Texans head coach listener bracket winner from earlier this week as their next head coach? Some interesting audio from Albert Breer on a podcast next.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.